Welcome to ITAD Talk and part two in this series. Here is your host, Jeff Bittner.
Think about that globally. If we said, well, 5 billion adults in the world and everyone has five phones, like that's it, and it's 500 pounds of raw material dug out of the ground to make each one.
Wow.
It's just a massive impact. If everyone in the U.S. were to use their phone just a year longer, it would be the equivalent of taking 600,000 cars off the road.
Wow.
The carbon impact of manufacturing these things is just huge.
Now, I'm sure that the cell phone manufacturers wouldn't want everybody to hear that.
Yeah, well, they need to find new business models. And you already see, I mean, Apple and Google make a lot of their money off of services, right? So they'll be perfectly fine if they're selling fewer phones than they have in the past. We need to get to where we have a steady state where we're manufacturing phones to replace the ones that are in the end of life, but we're not just, you know, getting everyone on this 18-month upgrade cycle treadmill. You don't need a new phone because the new one is blue.
Right.
You'll be fine.
I know, it's funny. I had a iPhone 10 and I just upgraded to the 13, and you know, it's faster and everything, but I mean, there wasn't that much that's changed on it really.
There would be a big jump from generation to generation. There was a massive improvement from the 4 to the 5 to the 6. But over time the technology starts to plateau and you get less significant improvements year on year. And that's really what we're seeing with smartphones now. Mm. A new smartphone isn't fundamentally different from a phone 3 years ago.
So do you think there's any other areas that we need to focus on to affect the macro level change beside the state and federal area as far as laws and everything?
I mean, I think working on consumer perception, getting people willing to invest in better products that last longer, I think will be impactful. The most common thing that breaks in the vacuum is the power switch. Can you get a replacement power switch, or when the little spring breaks, do you have to throw the whole thing away? That's the kind of improvements we need to build into our thought process around buying electronics.
And so do you think that thought process is, do you think the manufacturers want it that way? So when something breaks, you'll end up buying a new one rather than trying to get a small part and fix it?
I think the manufacturers are caught in a little bit of a trap right now where if you have vacuums at Walmart, one's $100, one's $200. Let's say the $200 one is built better. It's more robust. It's got spare parts available. It's got a service ecosystem. They're competing against this $100 one that's cheaper, and it's hard to make that differentiation at retail. So I think manufacturers have been pushed into making these cheaper and cheaper products. And so I think that this is something where, you know, society can come in and provide an indicator to improve things. France, at the beginning of the year, rolled out a repairability score on certain categories of products where it rates a product from 1 to 10 on how easy or hard it is to fix. And that is really changing dramatically consumer perception around products in France.
Interesting. Yeah, that's so that you would, like, right when you buy the product, you would know. It's funny because I went to buy a master lock over the weekend, and I didn't realize they had ratings on how the securitability of the lock, how hard it is to break it or pick it, you know, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it goes like 2, 3, 4, 5 and so on. So if they had a scale on products like that, then at least a consumer would have a choice, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that has a big impact. So what's cool about the French system is it says the product repair score has to be right next to the price. So if you go to apple.fr and you look to buy an iPhone, right next to the price, it says the iPhone gets a 5 out of 10 on the repair score index.
So which phone gets the highest score?
The Fairphone, it's just a startup out of the Netherlands, is the top rating smartphone, I think, on both our iFixit scorecard and France's scorecard. It's kind of similar to the framework that way.
Okay, so what are some of the most difficult points in your career or some of the most memorable lessons you've learned?
I mean, you know, we've always just had an obsession with creating the best possible experience for people. We want to make it as easy for people to fix things as possible. And so for us, the big pivots have been when we've rolled out.
Sorry, you're fading out.
For us, okay. our big moments have been when we've rolled out new major new features. Like iFixit started as just a publishing platform. We're just publishing repair guides that we wrote. and we switched and opened it up to anyone to edit. And that was a really big moment, really big capability. It's worked really well. So that you know, it's been being willing to make like long bets. It took us 3 years of solid R&D to build that, and then to roll it out and see it work has been really satisfying. There's been lots of other things that I've tried that haven't worked nearly as well. I think, you know, I think that's also part of it is, you know, you can't be afraid to fail. For every 10 things I try, maybe 2 work.
Wow.
And that's okay.
So what is the scale of your business? I mean, like how many people do you have on staff? Because since people can contribute, then you wouldn't need as much staff, right? For that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we have you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the world contributing to iFixit. Our core staff is relatively small. We're in small town, San Luis Obispo in Central California. And then we have a team in Germany that does our, you know, localization work and distribution for European markets.
Nice. Well, that's a great story. You've really built a great company, and it's one that's contributing and giving back to the environment and lengthening the life of these products. Where do you see the biggest usage coming from? Is it the end user, or is it the repair shops, or?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, we've done surveys and we've asked people, hey, how many things have you fixed using iFixit? And amazingly, the average number is 7. So people are engaged. They're coming back. It's like once we get the first repair, they come back. But then we've had some people fill out the survey and say, well, I fixed 10,000 things using iFixit. And we're like, really? How is that possible? And well, I learned, you know, doing my own repairs, and then I started a professional operation. So we think that's really cool. By traffic numbers, the bulk of the traffic is consumer. But I would bet in terms of impact, number of people, number of repairs actually done in the world, that the pros you know, may have a bigger actual impact net on the environment.
So have you tried to work with any of the school systems? Because I know, like, and I'm sure for yourself too, when I was younger, I took an auto shop class, a wood shop class, and things like that.
Yeah, we would love to work more closely with high schools. You know, our information is out there. We want it to be, you know, kind of fundamentally part of the internet. A you know, critically useful tool. We have a program that we run with engineering universities where they work on, you know, writing repair manuals and adding to iFixit, and that's been really successful. But we'd love to see more of these, you know, after school clubs. You can imagine an after school repair club that's profitable, fixing game consoles. And we've helped a handful of those get started and going. And if you get the right folks involved, it can be really inspiring and really effective.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a really good base that could grow. And I mean, teaching people when they're younger too, then that you know, just continues with them as they get older and have children and so on. So it kind of keeps that mentality and that line of thinking going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think tinkering and fixing also, it teaches engineering. It teaches fundamental skills that are necessary and useful in life.
So do you have anything else that you think we haven't touched on or covered that you might want to bring out, either about your company or the industry?
I mean, I would say there's never been a more exciting time to be in this space. There is so much going on. There's so much public support. When you've got, you know, the White House coming out and saying, hey, we see repair being part of the green jobs revolution, that's really exciting. So I couldn't be more thrilled with where we're at. And I think so I guess what I would exhort people is, like, get involved, get engaged with the industry, come to conferences, you know, contribute on iFixit. And the more, if there's like one overriding lesson that we've learned from iFixit, where almost all of the work that we've ever done with iFixit, we've just given away, we've put online for free. And you're doing that with this podcast, right?
Right. Correct. Yes.
So that's get out there and share. And the more that you give back, the more I think impactful your business will be. And also, we definitely, you know, it comes around. People, you know, I can go into you know, to a bar near any you know, large company, and the IT guys there owe me a beer, right? And that's awesome. So the more that you give back, the more everybody wins.
Hey, so have you been able to use your business skills in like a mentoring fashion? Either maybe somebody's mentored you, or you've mentored others.
Yeah, we have a local startup incubator that we helped get started here in, we're in San Luis Obispo. It's called the Hot House, and they've got a space downtown. It's a co-working space, and then people are always starting businesses. And so, yeah, I've definitely mentored companies coming through there, and it's been fun. And we have had far more repair businesses start out of our town than is typical. iCrack started here, repair desks, or not repair desks, repair tech. Started here, a software company that ended up integrating with Repair Shopper. So yeah, it's there's one right now called Repairs that's pretty cool. That is they are helping with restaurant equipment repairs.
Interesting. And that's like, is that R-U-B Pairs?
R-O-O Pairs, Repairs. Okay. And their mascot is a little kangaroo. I think it's an amazing name. I'm jealous I didn't think of it first.
Nice. That's great. Yeah, that sounds like an interesting area as well. So would that be like for the stoves and all that kind of the general equipment?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You're a chef or, you know, line cook in the restaurant, and the fryer goes out. What do you do? Right? And you're so in the weeds doing your work, it's really essential. And so they'll actually come out to a restaurant and inventory everything that they have, put barcodes on it, and then give them a software tool where they can. So then they just call, you know, they call a central number, they go on there and they say, hey, the fryer is out, and then they'll find a local repair tech and dispatch them. And because the tech knows the model number and serial number and everything ahead of time, it can bring the parts with them when they come out.
So it's a little bit different. It's not like where they're teaching the actual people in the restaurant to repair it, but they're kind of organizing the product that's in there and the information needed to repair it and the person that has the right skill set to repair it along with the parts that comes
to it. Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Is that company starting to scale?
I've heard that they're doing well. Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's always cool to see. I mean, we have a lot of innovation around making new products. We need more innovations around keeping the products that we already have working better longer.
Great. Okay, well, I'd really like to thank you for being on ITAD Talk this afternoon, and it's been really nice to this first time I've spoke with you, and I really appreciate the job that you're doing for our industry and for keeping products out there, and so that, you know, like you said, we don't have to, you know, keep mining more metals and things like that we can keep some of the stuff lasting longer. And then, of course, obviously we're spending hundreds of dollars for a lot of these products, and sometimes we just think there's nothing we can do with it but throw it away. So that gives us a nice way to make our money go farther as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you once again. And just once more, is there anything more that you wanted to
add? No, I think it's a great discussion. Yeah, I think we covered it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And are you going to be at the eScrap show by any chance in a couple
of
weeks?
I would love to. I have been at every eScrap for like the last 15 years, and this is the first one I'm going to miss.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
Well, I guess last year I didn't go either, but that wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
I've got some family stuff, and so I can't be there.
Okay, understood. Well, I'm sure we'll probably get to meet each other in person soon, so we'll look forward to that. And once again, thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. Yeah, have a wonderful day.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.